chapter 21. So in our series through the book of Genesis, this is message number 22, entitled Pilgrim Faith. We'll be looking at chapter 21, so we want to start by reading the first three verses. And the Lord visited Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. So what do you do when all your dreams come true? Well, if you've ever had a long cherished dream or even just a goal that you finally reached, you can probably say that it wasn't all that you thought it would be. Sometimes we're driven not by some grand goal, but we're just driven by trying to get past that next obstacle. You know, if I can just get to this point, if I can just get there, just get that, whatever that it is, and then that happens, and of course, what happens? Well, there's another obstacle in the way. Something usually takes its place. Well, for 25 years, Abraham had sojourned in the land of Canaan as a foreigner, with the promise that he would have a son and that he would become a great nation. And when that son is finally born, we read of conflict more than we do of a great celebration. And I'm sure Abraham and Sarah were overjoyed at the birth of Isaac. And of course, Abraham did throw a big feast. But that's not really where the account focuses as we look at chapter 21. Rather, we immediately read of two different conflicts, and these two conflicts concern the two central promises of God's covenant with Abraham, the seed and the land, through which all the other promises will be realized to bless and or curse the nations of the earth. So chapter 20, where we looked at last time, recounts Abraham journeying to the south, to the land of the Philistines, presumably in search of pasture land for his extensive herds. And Abraham is still awaiting the promised seed, and he encounters a threat to that promise in the form of the king of Gerar, this Abimelech of the land of the Philistines. And Abraham once again presents Sarah as his sister, and she's taken by the king. Now, in that chapter, God intervened dramatically in a dream to Abimelech. And God is obviously acting in that chapter to preserve his promise, to preserve his purpose. And he demonstrated that he is indeed the ruler over all. He struck Abimelech's household with infertility in some way, leading to the return of Sarah to Abraham. So as you come through chapter 20, it's not Abraham's clever strategy that he thought up when he left Ur of the Chaldees, that everywhere he went, when any inquiry was made, he was going to say that Sarah was his sister, and she was going to say that Abraham was her brother. But it wasn't Abraham's clever strategy that really preserved the promises of God, but rather it was the actions of God and his intervention that delivered them. Essentially, it's God's faithfulness to his own promises that preserved that promise intact. So now as we come to chapter 21, we finally get to this great event that we've been building up to since chapter 12, and that's the birth of Isaac, the promised son to Abraham and Sarah. Now, as you read chapter 21, you realize that Moses gives us just a few verses about that, and then proceeds on. He gives us many more verses about this conflict over the wells that the well that Abraham had dug, that he does really the birth of Isaac, which is interesting. So he doesn't really dwell on that in this account, but really he brings out these conflicts. And so the conflicts in this chapter focus again on those two central promises, the seed and the land. Now, the writer of Hebrews, in speaking of Abraham and Sarah, as well as some other early believers, wrote in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 13, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. In other words, Abraham's life was a journey, and it was not a destination. Abraham never arrived at a full fulfillment of all the promises that God had made to him, but rather he saw that those promises being fulfilled in the future, and willingly and gladly lived as a pilgrim, as a foreigner, as a stranger on the earth. And so this chapter highlights this aspect of Abraham's pilgrim faith as he is in the land with the promised son born, and yet he is reminded that he is still yet a stranger and a pilgrim. So as we look at chapter 21, we want to look at it in the two episodes that are presented to us. We have verses 1 to 21, the account of Isaac and Ishmael, and in verses 22 to 34, we get Abraham's covenant with Abimelech. So we'll start with the first part here of Isaac and Ishmael in the first 21 verses. And let's read verses 1 to 5. And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, who Sarah bare to him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God had commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. So the chapter begins by noting that the Lord did according to his word, the word that he had promised to Abraham and to Sarah. Now, throughout Genesis, as we've been working our way through, we've noticed how that Moses has given emphasis to God's spoken word. From the creation to the flood and now to Abraham, God said, and it was so. That's something of a recurring theme throughout the book of Genesis. So here again, we're seeing that God spoke and it was so. Sometimes Christians believe that God spoke the world into existence with no trouble, but then sometimes we'll stumble that God's promises could be true in their lives. I suppose that's one of the ironies that we live with. We oftentimes have no trouble believing, oh, well, you know, the Bible's true, and God did these things, and he created the world, and he sent the flood, and he gave Abraham and Sarah a son. But then to think that God's word could be true in my own life is something that I oftentimes stumble at, and we do. But let Abraham and Sarah and Isaac remind us that nothing is too hard for God to keep his promises that he has made in his word. God spoke, and it was so. There are still yet many things to be fulfilled of what God has spoken, but all of those things will be so, just as what we've seen that's already been fulfilled. Now, it's noted here in Genesis 21 that Sarah conceived and had a son. And what this means is that through the normal means that she had this son, Isaac. Now, the writer of Hebrews, of course, said that she received strength by faith to be able to conceive and have a child. And the previous chapter that we studied showed that God had healed and blessed her physically in order to have a son. Of course, she was 90 years old. So God had worked miraculously to restore her body so that she was able to have a child by, again, the normal means. Now, it's also noted that this occurred when? At the time that God said that it would occur. Now, Moses shows that there were two responses. So God spoke and it was so. He has fulfilled a promise here. He's kept his word and fulfilled a promise. And then Moses gives us two responses from Abraham that demonstrate his faith. Abraham obeyed what God had said to him. So if you would look back in chapter 17, verses 9 to 14, he was commanded to name his son Isaac, and that's exactly what he did. He named him Isaac, and then he was also commanded to circumcise him on the eighth day, and that's also what he did. So both of these obviously commemorating the covenant promises of God and again in obedience to what God had commanded Abraham to do. So again, God spoke and it was so. His promise was fulfilled. His promise was kept, and Abraham responded in faith with obedience. Now the time is again marked here as we look at there in verse 5. Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. So he and Sarah had waited for 25 years for the promise to be fulfilled. But these weren't just any 25 years. So in other words, if Abraham was 20 years old, and God says you're going to have a son, but that son didn't come about until Abraham and Sarah were 45 years old, that wouldn't be quite as much of a stretch, obviously. But this promise came to them later in life. These are 25 years later in life. And we read how that by that time they had figured this is physically impossible. How is this going to come about? But nevertheless, it did. Let's look at verses 6 to 8. And Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh so that all that hear will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have given children suck? For I have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. So the birth account is wrapped up here with this celebration of the birth. Sarah's response, which had been disbelief or maybe even bewilderment of simply being of thinking, you know, how can this be possible? How can this happen? Well, she makes note here that it has turned into joy. It has turned into rejoicing. And it's funny how in the midst of difficulties that we have a similar experience. In the midst of difficulties, we just can't see any way that this could be turned into rejoicing. We can't see any way. How could this be for good? How could this situation, how could this circumstance be turned? And yet, you know, here is Sarah just saying God has turned her laughing into joy, into rejoicing, what was impossible. And she even mentions that there in verse 7. Who would have believed it? Who would have thought that? Who would have thought at 90 years of age, after having been barren all that time, that she would give Abraham a son? And then we're told that Abraham makes a great feast to celebrate the birth of Isaac, and the mention of him being weaned probably indicates somewhere around 2 to 3 years old that Isaac was at the time that this feast was had. So now let's look at verses 9 to 11. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. So the rest of this birth account, which goes down to verse number 21, is actually taken up with Ishmael. And again, we get a lot more about this and then a lot more about the well and things later than we got really about the birth of Isaac in particular. But what we're told is that Ishmael was mocking Isaac. And we're not given any more clear information about what was done. So the word that's used here for mocking is really the same word for laughing. And so it has quite a range of meaning. It could mean sarcasm. It could mean, malicious mockery. It could simply mean laughing. It can mean joy. So quite a range of meaning. It can also go on the more extreme negative end toward very evil acts. But we don't know for sure. Obviously, it's given to us in a negative connotation. In some way, he's mocking, he's sneering. We don't know what all might have taken place, but nevertheless, obviously, Sarah takes a great offense to it, and so she wanted Hagar and Ishmael to be thrown out. She wants to prevent any problems of any confusion of inheritance between Ishmael and Isaac. Isaac is actually Abraham's firstborn son and the older son. She doesn't want any confusion between them two. But yet, this was still Abraham's son. And so we have note here that this was a very hard thing for Abraham to do. Because this is, again, it's still his son, and it's a very difficult situation. And God had promised to Abraham that he was going to bless Ishmael, but it also made clear to Abraham that Ishmael was not the heir. He was not the one that was going to inherit the covenant promise of Abraham, but rather it was going to be Isaac. And we look at verses 12 to 14. And God said unto Abraham, Let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad, and because of thy bondwoman. In all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And also of the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and took bread and a bottle of water, and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder, and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. So once again, God spoke to Abraham. Now, again, we're not given any clear indication of how this was. This is just a voice that comes to Abraham. Was there an appearance of some kind? Generally, when there was appearance, it seems like it was noted. So we don't know for sure. But at least it does seem that Abraham heard the voice of God speaking to him. And God speaks to Abraham, and he gives Abraham two particular assurances. All right, so Isaac has been born, and Ishmael is obviously there's some conflict there between Hagar and Sarah and Ishmael and Isaac. And so Sarah wants them put out. Abraham, this is a difficult thing for him to face, but God speaks to Abraham, and he gives him two assurances that he can do this and that it's going to be okay. The first assurance that is given is that Isaac, in fact, was the seed of promise. In other words, when God spake this promise to Abraham, when he spoke that promise and said that you're going to have a child, Isaac is that child. Ishmael was not the child that God was referring to. So Isaac is that seed of promise. So you can be assured of that. There needs to be no confusion and no conflict of which of these two that God had chosen to inherit the covenant. So Isaac is indeed the son of promise, not Ishmael. So in other words, sending Ishmael away is the right thing to do for Abraham. The second assurance that God gives him is that Ishmael is still yet Abraham's son, and God will bless Ishmael because of it. Because of his connection to Abraham, God's going to bless him just like he promised to do. Back in Genesis chapter 17 and verse number 20, God said, And as for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Behold, I have blessed him and will make him fruitful. And will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget, and I will make him a great nation. So this is one of the many nations that God promised would come of Abraham. But of course, there's one nation in particular that will come of Abraham and will come through the promised seed, which again is not Ishmael. So God gives him these two assurances. Number one, that Isaac is indeed the promised seed. He is the inheritor of the covenant. He is the one through whom God is going to make a great nation of Abraham. And number two, Ishmael will still be blessed. He is Abraham's son. God had spoken and promised to bless Ishmael and to make a great nation of him. And God is not going to let that fail. He's still going to do that, even if Abraham puts Hagar and Ishmael out of the home. So then, As a result, Abraham did indeed send them away, and just as Sarah had said, and God had assured him to do. Then we get verses 15 to 21. And the water was spent in the bottle, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs, and she went and sat her down over against him, a good way off, as it were a bowshot. For she said, Let me not see the death of the child. And she sat over against him and lift up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad, and the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said unto her, What aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him in thine hand, for I will make him a great nation. And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad drink. And God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. And he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took him a wife out of the land of Egypt. So it wasn't long that Hagar and Ishmael have set out. They've left from Abraham and from all of his flocks and herds and servants and so on. But it wasn't long before they were out of supplies. They're wandering about in this wilderness and have no help that is nearby to them. and get to the point where Hagar begins to despair and she gives up Ishmael for dead. In other words, we're told that, you know, she puts him in one place and she goes over to another where she can't see him because she doesn't want to watch her son die under these conditions. But God hears Ishmael. Here's his cries, his groanings, and we're told that his angel speaks to Hagar. Now, we're not given very much in this account as far as identifying the angel. Is this an appearance of Christ again, a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ? Is this just an angel? We're not told. It's not entirely clear. Some have some reasons for seeing it one way or another, but nevertheless, God sends this word to her through his angel. And his promise to Abraham then is told to Hagar. God will make a great nation of Ishmael. In other words, God's promise here indicates you're not going to die. Ishmael is not going to die. I have given word. I have made a promise. I'm going to make of him a great nation. Well, here we have Hagar looking around at a situation that seems physically impossible to her. We have no water. We have no supplies. We have none to help us. And obviously, they were in a very weakened condition at this point. And yet God says, no, I'm going to make of him a great nation, meaning that he's going to live. Well, obviously, if Ishmael were to die here in the wilderness, God's promise and the nation that he promised would not be fulfilled. You see, God's word to Abraham concerning Ishmael is every bit as authoritative, it is every bit as sure as his word to Abraham concerning Isaac. So we could look at God's promises to Abraham, the covenant that God made with Abraham, and we might say, well, that promise of a seed and that promise of the land, those are two central core promises that without them being fulfilled, all of the rest will not be fulfilled. And that is true. And so even though God's promise concerning Ishmael, we might say, is not as central in that sense to the covenant that God made with Abraham. Here's the point. God has spoken, and it was so. It is every bit as authoritative. It is every bit as reliable. It is every bit as true. It is every bit sure as the promise to Abraham for Isaac. And so God makes this word known to Hagar as well. God has promised. God has given his word. He is going to make a great nation of Ishmael. They were in a very difficult circumstance. Again, we've seen just this recurring theme as we've gone through the book of Genesis as how often that circumstances are difficult and even look impossible. How can this promise be fulfilled? Here's Hagar and Ishmael despairing of life in the wilderness with no help, and it looks like that this is the end for them. But it's not the end. Why? Because God had promised. God had spoken. God said, and it was so. And then we're told in this account that God showed her a well of water that would sustain them and would help them. And obviously, they did get help from there. And so Ishmael lived. Not only did he live, but we're told that he grew. He becomes an archer, becomes most likely a reference to a hunter. He dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and he even married a wife, a woman from Egypt, that Hagar got for him. And then we come to the last part of this chapter, verses 22 to 34, where we read about Abraham's covenant with Abimelech. So let's start here in verses 22 to 24. And it came to pass at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, the chief captain of his host, spake unto Abraham, saying, God is with thee in all that thou doest. Now therefore swear unto me here by God that thou wilt not deal falsely with me, nor with my son, nor with my son's son, but according to the kindness that I have done unto thee, thou shalt do unto me, and to the land wherein thou hast sojourned. And Abraham said, I will swear. Now, if you look ahead to verse number 34, which comes at the end of this chapter, it's obvious that this episode concerning this well with Abraham and Abimelech, this episode is a part of this account of the birth of Isaac. You can tell that it's being wrapped up there in verse number 34, and then Moses is proceeding on. So in this section of the book, this all goes together. But as you're just sort of reading maybe casually through Genesis chapter 21, this sort of seems like a random piece of triviality in comparison. I mean, the promise for the birth of Isaac, that's major. And that happens, and then we get this thing about the well, and well, then we get on and we know what comes in the next chapter, the great test of faith for Abraham with Isaac. So why do we have a count like this? And again, there are more verses devoted to this than there were to the actual birth of Isaac. Well, it seems like just mundane things. Abraham's just sort of settling a dispute over some wells. But it does contribute to the ongoing concern, again, over those two crucial and central promises to Abraham in the covenant, the seed and the land. Obviously, the first part of the chapter speaks to the seed, and this last part of the chapter speaks to the land. God promised a seed would come from Abraham that God would make a great nation of to possess the land that had been promised to him. And through the fulfilling of these two central promises, God would fulfill the rest of the promises to Abraham, the blessing and the cursing of the nations through Abraham. So in other words, God will fulfill his promises by giving Abraham's seed nation this everlasting possession of the land that's promised, and through them bless all the nations of the earth, including those other nations from Abraham, just like the Ishmaelites. All right, so Abimelech, here, though, as we look at the beginning of this account, Abimelech demonstrated that he still respected Abraham. He still respected the God of Abraham. And he's also demonstrating that Abraham, by this time, obviously had become very great. He had a very large household when you consider all the servants and things that he had, all the flocks and herds, all the workmen, all the entourage, I guess, pertaining to Abraham had become very, very large indeed, and Abraham was looked at as very powerful. And so Abimelech comes to Abraham and he's seeking a covenant with him. So Abimelech wanted Abraham to swear that he would not deceive Abimelech anymore. Now, this is obviously in reference to the deception of Abraham and Sarah, saying that they were brother and sister when they first came into the land. And obviously, Abimelech still has fear here because he realized that he very well could have been destroyed. After the Lord appears to him in a dream, it really unnerved him what could have taken place there. And he was really upset with Abraham. When we talked about that in that chat, he was upset with Abraham for doing that to him and basically putting him in that position. And what he's essentially saying is, I want you to swear to me that you're not going to do that to me anymore. I want you to swear that you're not going to put me, you're not going to deceive me and put me into that place where I have offended your God. He's going to destroy me. That's essentially what Abimelech is asking for, not only for him, but even for his house, his son and his son's son, and so on. Well, Abraham did swear, and the word is used three times in this account, and it means to take an oath, essentially. And he does swear to this, that he will not deceive him in that way anymore. So then let's read the rest of this, verses 25 to 34. And Abraham reproved Abimelech because of a well of water which Abimelech's servants had violently taken away. And Abimelech said, I wot not who hath done this thing, neither didst thou tell me, neither yet heard I of it but today. And Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them unto Abimelech, and both of them made a covenant. And Abraham set seven ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, what mean these seven ewe lambs which thou hast set by themselves? And he said, for these seven ewe lambs shalt thou take of my hand, that they may be a witness unto me that I have digged this well. Wherefore he called that place Beersheba, because there they swear, both of them. Thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech rose up, and Phicol, the chief captain of his host, and they returned into the land of the Philistines. And Abraham planted a grove in Beersheba and called thereon the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned in the Philistines' land many days. So Abraham discusses this well that Abimelech's servants had taken away from Abraham. And this was settled, as you read this, of the lambs and of the things that they did. Essentially, it's settled by ratifying this covenant between them. In other words, that they've made a formal covenant here, and they're by the procedures and expectations of the day, they are going through that process. Now, we also, when we look at this, we can see a contrast when we go back to chapter number 15. So when God ratified his covenant with Abraham back in chapter number 15, we know that Abraham had to lay out those pieces of the animals and all that. And Abraham goes into a deep sleep, a trance-like state. And God alone passes through those pieces. So in the contrast, we see how that God's promise, God's covenant with Abraham is what we would call a unilateral covenant. And the covenant here between Abraham and Abimelech is not unilateral, but rather they are both together participating in this, ratifying this covenant. So it was mutual between Abraham and Abimelech. Now the account ends in this chapter by noting that Abraham worshipped God and remained in the land of the Philistines many days. And as I said a few moments ago, obviously bringing an end to this section and this, and particularly this account of the birth of Isaac that includes a number of episodes. So as we think about Genesis chapter 21, Paul refers to this account in Galatians chapter 4, verses 21 to 31. And Paul refers to this account, Isaac and Ishmael, and he uses it as an analogy between the old and the new covenants. Now, Ishmael was born by the flesh, and Ishmael being born by the flesh is taken as the old covenant. Isaac was born by promise, that's taken as the new covenant. And so Paul's point is that once the promised seed had come, and that promised seed that Paul's referring to is the ultimate, the seed, that's Jesus Christ, then the new covenant was in effect. The old covenant, having been fulfilled, was done away. So to go back to the old covenant would be to undo what God had done in the coming of Christ. So in other words, Paul looks at this account, and he says that once the promised seed was born, once Isaac was born, once Isaac had come to the house, then Ishmael, the bondwoman, and her son were put out of the house. So Paul again makes this analogy. And as he's writing to those, you remember those churches in Galatia, which had a number among them that were being troubled with a legalistic preaching of the Judaizers and seeking to go back under the works of the law, at least in some measure, for salvation. And so Paul goes back to this as an illustration, and he says that to go back to the old covenant would be to undo what God had done in the coming of Christ. In other words, it would be like, after what we've read here in chapter 21, it would be like if Isaac then would leave Abraham's house and the covenant inheritance that he had to go into the wilderness to be adopted by Hagar, and to join her and Ishmael to live with them. That's what Paul said it would be like for you to seek salvation by the works of the law. It is to go backwards. And of course, Paul's point is that no one is going to do that. Isaac's not going to do that. No one in Isaac's place would be looking to do that. He says, but that's what it's like when you are seeking salvation by the law. Paul also referred to this account in Romans chapter 9 and verses 6 to 9. And there he uses this account to illustrate that election is not based on physical descent. And he makes the point that not all Israel is Israel. In other words, Paul's point there is that just being a Jew descended from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob did not automatically mean salvation. Obviously, Isaac and Ishmael were both descended from Abraham, But one was chosen and the other was not. Now, Paul also is making the point in the letter to the Romans that salvation is by faith to all who believe, the Jew first, but also to the Gentiles of the nations. And again, it doesn't come by physical birth, much like our genetic traits of eye color and hair color and things like that. So we don't want to read this account. We don't want to read Genesis chapter 21 without seeing how that God acts faithfully according to his promises, and how that Abraham illustrates faith just as Moses wrote in Genesis chapter 15 and verse number 6, and he believed in the Lord and he counted it to him for righteousness. So again, the promises come by faith, and faith results in obedience. Now, this is not only to the children of Abraham, but everyone, every son, every daughter of Adam, to every one of us, even today, it comes by faith. Lastly, we also see that faith does not receive its full reward in this life. It is in the life to come where faith becomes sight. So faith does not bring us an overcoming of all difficulties and an overcoming of all obstacles in this life here and now. But faith does see us safely through all the dangers and difficulties of this life to the other side, that life to come where all of those things will be passed away and faith will become sight.